Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we are going to have part two of our interview with Tom Terwilliger, Tony Pearson, and Phil Williams. We had part one last week, and it was just kind of a roundtable discussion where we talked about bodybuilding in the 1980s when all those gentlemen turned professional. And we're going to continue talking about that today, where the guys will talk about what it was like when they got their pro card and some of their early training experiences when they were younger, which we talked about last week. And we're also going to talk about posing in the sport and some of the ways that bodybuilding today is so much different than it was in the 80s and the 70s when these guys were competing and growing up in the sport. So I think you guys are going to enjoy it. Before we get to that, I wanted to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can just go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. They have offices all over the United States, but they can work with anybody in the continental United States just through their website. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they'll give you a free consultation. Plus, they'll give you 20% off your first order. All right, we've got a lot to talk about this week in our intro. Unfortunately, it seems like we go through this every week. We had another death in the sport, and this one was another shock. Matt Mendenhall, one of the greatest amateur bodybuilders in the 1980s, passed away totally unexpectedly yesterday on Saturday, and this took everybody by surprise. Matt was only 61 years old. He was born in 1960. Of course, he's always been recognized as one of the most genetically gifted bodybuilders ever, and his name is always brought up when they talk about bodybuilders who never turned pro that should have been pro, and I believe Matt definitely should have been a pro bodybuilder. You heard my interview with Lee Haney before. Lee said that Matt was probably the most gifted bodybuilder he ever competed against. And Matt took second to Lee at the very first MPC Nationals back in 1982. And I think, like I said, Matt was born in 1960, so he was in his early 20s then, probably 22 years old. And then the following year, Matt dropped down to fourth place, I believe, at the Nationals, and that's the year that Bob Parris won, where he beat Rory Liedelmeyer, and Mike Christian was third, so it was a very tough lineup. Matt was a little bit off because he was married at the time, and his wife had the flu, and he was, of course, sleeping with her, and he caught the flu, and he ended up being in the show very flat, looked like he lost weight. But he came back the next year looking awesome, and he took second place to Mike Christian, who was really ripped. So Matt just basically had a physique that was genetically perfect. His structure was great, but his body parts were incredible. He just had total proportion throughout his whole body. Huge calves, huge thighs, wide shoulders, arms, everything. I mean, Matt just had it all, but he just couldn't nail his conditioning and come in super shredded. And he was always beaten by guys who were not as genetically gifted as him, but they were more ripped. Mike Christian beat him in 1984. Gary Strider beat him in 1986. In 1985, he competed in the MPC USA Championships. He did win the heavyweight class, but back then you had to win the overall. And Matt won the heavyweight class, but he lost the overall to David Hawk. But that year they had the World Games, which was held as an alternative to the Olympics. And they held it in London. And actually, Dorian Yates was in that contest. I think he took seventh place. But that contest that year was won by Barry DeMay, who was in amazing shape, and Matt took second to Barry DeMay. So Matt was just as good of a bodybuilder as all these other guys, but like I said, he just didn't nail his conditioning, and he just couldn't make it. And then he finally did try to make one last try for the Nationals in 1991, and that was when you had a new group of bodybuilders coming up. Kevin Lavroni was first, Lex Wheeler was second, Paul DeMeo was third, Ronnie Coleman was fourth, and I think that was Ronnie's first national level show, and then Matt was in fifth place. So he just never made it, and as you guys know on the show, I have been trying for years, the last few years, to try to get Matt to come on the show and do an interview, and it just never happened. He just was very, very reluctant. He had a relationship with Rachel McLish during the 1980s. They dated for a while, and he didn't want to talk about Rachel, and I told him we wouldn't, but he still wouldn't do it. And Tom Terwilliger even tried and reached out to Matt to try to get him to come on the show, and he still wouldn't do it. So it's just so heartbreaking for me, not only to see the passing of Matt, but to just be very sad that we never got him on the show. I go through this a lot as a host of this podcast. I try to get a lot of these bodybuilders on here, and they just don't want to do it. And unfortunately, you never know when your time is up, and nobody ever thought Matt was going to go this early, 61 years old. I mean, it's just amazing. So I saw on Facebook yesterday there were some postings about Matt. So I wanted to read a couple of them. This first one was from Tom Terwilliger, and he said, "So sad today. A dear friend and fellow bodybuilder, Matt Mendenhall, has passed away. My heart goes out to his family and loved ones. Matt was an amazing athlete. Anyone who knows the sport could never deny Matt had what it takes to have been a multi-time Mr. Olympia at the top of the heap, but he just missed the mark several times. I had the pleasure of competing on stage with Matt at the 1986 Nationals. As a small coincidence," there are no small coincidences, "while I was training back in New York to literally beat Matt, he was training alongside my future wife, Dawn, in Colorado. Small world. Although Matt will be remembered most as a great bodybuilder, he was also a great human being with a heart of gold and a powerful intellect. He was a chiropractor and physical therapist with an intuitive gift for helping people heal. But a few years ago, he developed a serious back injury that even he could not heal, and it caused him constant pain and discomfort. The last time we spoke a few months ago, he was going in for yet another surgery, but wasn't all that optimistic. Perhaps it didn't do the job. I have two friends with extremely popular bodybuilding podcasts. Both had asked me if I could persuade Matt to do an interview. He always said, no, not right now. He would follow up with, but after I complete my book, I would love to. I hope he got close to finishing it. For me and the rest of the bodybuilding community, it would be a must read. We invited Matt to do a seminar at my gym in New York 30 years ago. He gave so much great advice and information, but he said something that stuck with me forever. If you have a choice between being great or average at what you do, and the only thing weighing in the balance is hard work and perseverance, choose to be great anyway. It will turn the hard work into an impassioned labor of love. Rest in peace, my brother." And of course, Tom was mentioning me there as far as the podcast he was trying to get him to come on. And then this one was from Corey Everson, and Corey and her late husband, Jeff Everson, they knew Matt Mendenhall very well. And actually, when we get done with this podcast, when we get done with our interview later today, I'm going to read an article from the July 1984 issue of Flex Magazine about Matt Mendenhall, and it was written by Jeff Everson. So Corey wrote, "I have been struggling with what to say about my dear friend and our brother in iron, Matt Mendenhall. Matt meant so much more to me than a bodybuilding legend. Matt was my friend, someone I could share my deepest stories with. We laughed and we cried together. We sent each other silly, goofy photos, and we brought the child back out of each other. Yes, he was the single most balanced, beautiful, classic bodybuilding physique of all time. But he was so much more. He was funny and filled with faith and love. He was kind and honest. He wanted the best for mankind. He trusted God and asked for nothing but gave everything. He loved everyone equally, whether you were a king or an elevator operator. He treated everyone with respect and dignity. He knew when it was time to quit competing, when the sport took a turn for the worse. But he departed with class, charisma, and he never looked back, nor did he gossip or spread rumor. He made the right choice. He had more potential than any other individual, both departed or living. Yet he chose his own path, and he went on to create personal greatness in his next chapter of life. This past year, Matt and I had reconnected and communicated almost daily. and I learned more and more about the incredible man he grew into being. I will miss our conversations. I will miss sharing our private stories and the laughs that came with them. Matt, I will miss your warmth and the prayers we shared. I will miss all of you, but I know where you are and who you are with, and I know you're going to be in the best company, enjoying your well-deserved eternal life of health and happiness. I'm so happy for you, but sad as I selfishly look forward to our interaction. I thank you for all you did for me while on this earth. Until we meet again, my sweet little brother, please say hi to Jeff and tell him I love him and miss him. Rest in peace. Wow. I didn't know Corey and Matt were that close. And then Rachel McLish posted something on her Facebook page today, so I wanted to read this also. She said, I was shocked and saddened when I opened Facebook late last night to hear of Matt's passing. For all of us who were lucky enough to be his friend, we loved him mostly for his kind heart, his generosity, his sweet nature, and of course, his sense of humor. There's so much to say about Matt, and it's all good. Those who knew or saw him through the magazines or in person instantly realized that this guy was special, and his physicality was out of this world. Truly gifted in the genetics department. As I scrolled to read the heartfelt tributes, I also noticed speculation as to why or how he died so young. And I can say for sure that the cause was not because he took or was taking anabolic drugs. He considered, as I did, anabolic use to be a curse, but a necessary evil in the sport in order to compete. In fact, he hated having to use them, and that was the primary reason he exited the sport he loved so much. But of course, he never stopped training or went on to create a thriving chiropractic practice, which he loved. But another thing, Matt was also a bit accident prone. He nearly lost his arm, shattered compound forearm break, nearly severed off when a pole broke mid-air as a teen Ohio State champ. A bad car accident in L.A., he was broadsided, full impact. A bike path accident when his front wheel got stuck in a crack in the concrete while he was going pretty fast. I looked behind me because I had lost him, only to turn around and find him breathing in pain. A young person can usually bounce back from these mishaps, i.e. until they show up later in life on x-rays, which brings me to the more mature age Matt and his most recent accident in 2014. He had contacted me during this time period to discuss and ask me about my own spinal cord neck surgery. Who were my doctors, the method, his injuries, his surgeries, his doctors, etc. In the weeks prior to this exchange, he was in ICU following a highly invasive spinal surgery. The following are his words, only day before his death. In the weeks prior to the exchange, Matt was in ICU following a highly invasive spinal surgery. To those interested in the entire recent conversation, I attached it. This is what he was enduring and suffering. I believe this also shows the special friendship we shared. Rest easy, dear Matt. I know you are with our Lord. And then I believe it has a conversation here. It says, Matt, now I'm frustrated. I was hoping to work another 10 years. It never once felt like work. Doing God's healing work never does. I loved helping others get out of pain. I was very good at it. Let's chat again soon. And then he said, thanks, Rachel. I know I get impatient with my recovery. It's just frustrating being in my third surgery. I've been going through this since 2014 when I slipped on my basement steps. The surgeon was right when he said this would be the toughest recovery. Fusing 23 segments all at once with titanium rods. Wow. I know the pain meds are necessary, but they make me so tired. Oh, well, one day at a time, right? Thanks. I needed that reminder. I needed that. In the Lord's name, help me be still. Amen. Wow. So it sounds like Matt was really going through a lot with that back surgery, and that, who knows, that might have been the cause of his passing. So, like I said, really, really unfortunate. And I think the whole bodybuilding world was sad to hear that. This has been one hell of a year for bodybuilding. We've been losing so many people. John Meadows, Billy Thunder Smith just died last week. He was an American Gladiator and a staple at Gold's Gym. He just passed away this last week. And now we have Matt Mendenhall passing. And I also got some bad news yesterday as far as Leon Brown is concerned. I guess Leon has terminal liver cancer, and he is in the hospital, and he doesn't look like he's going to make it very much longer. So Leon Brown, great staple, of course, in the bodybuilding community, was featured prominently in the book Pumping Iron. Anybody who said that, read that book remembers those three pictures of Leon's back, which were just absolutely incredible. some of the greatest bodybuilding pictures ever taken of any bodybuilder. And Leon continued to compete for many, many years. We had him on the show, and we did do a podcast interview with him several years ago. So you can look back in our archives on the bodybuildinglegendshow.com website and just look under podcast, and you'll see that interview. So it doesn't look like Leon's going to be with us much longer either. And I just got an email from one of his good friends in New York who told me that yesterday. So sad. But that's the way life is, I guess, right? And as we all get older, this is what happens. So rest in peace, Matt Mendenhall. We will definitely miss you. He went way, way too soon, and that was really a shame. All right. The other thing I want to talk about before we get to our interview with Tony, Tom, and Phil is Arnold Schwarzenegger. So Arnold finally answered everybody about what happened with his controversial interview that he did on a podcast where he said, basically, screw your freedoms in regards to wearing the mask. And he wanted to clarify it, and he did clarify it this last weekend in his newsletter that he sends out. And if anybody wants to get this newsletter, you can just go to schwarzenegger.com and sign up for it. I've been signed up for it the last few months. So Arnold gave a very long explanation. I don't know how much of this I'm going to read, but I do want to read part of it. And it says the controversy. So he says, now let's deal with the COVID stuff. If you're furious at me for my comments, read this because I think you can learn something. You might hate 90% of it and agree with 10%, but I'll take that. If you agreed with me and think you've heard enough, please read this because there might be something here that helps you deal with people who don't agree with you. Earlier this month, I spoke with my friend Alex Vindman and Brianna Goladra of CNN about Alex's new book. And during that interview, I was asked about a Facebook comment I made back in January that had just gone viral again, where I discussed COVID, masks, vaccines, and my opinion that we should listen to experts when 9 out of 10 of them agree. Here's part of the transcription for those of you who prefer that. People should know that there is a virus here. It kills people. And the only way we prevent it is to get vaccinated, wear masks, do social distancing, washing your hands all the time, or not just to think about, well, my freedom is being kind of disturbed here. No, screw your freedom, because with freedom comes obligations and responsibilities. We cannot just say, I have the right to do X, Y, and Z. When you infect other people, that is when it gets serious. Of course, some outlets decided to take one line out of this conversation, which was screw your freedom, and ran with that. That's fine. They have the right to choose clickbait instead of informing their audience. The outlets began printing it. Right-wing pundits tweeted that my father was a Nazi. They thought this was a revelation because they probably missed my video after actual neo-Nazis marched in Charlottesville chanting, Jews will not replace us. And I guess they also missed my video after January 6th. And some fitness influencers decided that this was the last straw and they could no longer support me. That is also fine. That's also their right. If they listened to the whole quote, they would have realized that I'm talking about all of the whiny babies that I see going viral on the internet who think that being asked to put on a mask is a perfect reason to throw a toddler fit in a grocery store and look like an absolute child. These are people who yell freedom in their American flag hats while not taking any time to study the history of our nation and how freedom and duty have always gone hand in hand. They think being an American means not caring about their fellow Americans, and I'm sorry, I can't accept that. That's why I wrote my piece in The Atlantic to explain the history behind my thoughts, with quotes from the Founding Fathers and our Constitution that emphasize the responsibility that comes with our hard-earned liberty. But my favorite quote came from a member of the World War II generation. That generation sent its men and boys all over the world to fight and asked the people who were at home to ration food and gasoline and sacrifice all types of things to ensure America's victory. He said, wearing a mask is nothing compared to what we were going through then. It's so comical nowadays to think that somebody won't wear a mask when in those days they would do anything for the United States. Thank you, Bill Platt. With all this going on, it was a wild week. One of my favorite strongmen I've ever worked with took my poster off his gym wall. Then a bodybuilder who played me in a movie copied that move, which wasn't very creative. We lost a sponsor of the Arnold Sports Festival. We added new sponsors immediately. And angry people yelled at me on the internet, accusing me of being a liberal and selling out. I guess they think I get paid to promote health, but they missed my fitness crusade for the past 50 years. But I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. They might have been confused when I donated $1 million to buy protective equipment for our healthcare workers at the beginning of this pandemic and thought I made money instead of giving it. So you might be wondering how I'm doing. The answer, as always, is fantastic. When the worst thing that happens to me this month is that some people yelling at me and then losing a sponsor for the Arnold Sports Festival, that's when you realize how lucky we are to live in this country. In fact, if nothing else, this whole episode has made me say, I love this fucking country. Because you know what? All of these people have the right to complain, and they won't be sent off to prison. And I have a right to say what I believe. That's beautiful. All right, let's see what else he's got here. I think he talks a little bit more. He's got a really, really long article in here. But that I think was basically it. He talks more about his feelings about COVID and about getting tested. And he says to listen to the experts because they know what they're talking about. So Arnold gave a very long explanation about his reasoning for saying that. Oh, and then at the end here, he says, I've had a few friends ask me if I would do all of this over again. My answer is I maybe would be a little less Arnold in the answer and simply explain that freedom has always come with responsibilities without saying screw your freedom. I love the freedom and opportunity this country offers, and I talk about my devotion to the United States and the debt I owe to this country in every speech. I'm always giving back to this country because of what its freedom offered me, because as I found success, I also found that freedom comes with a duty to help your fellow Americans. But I received several messages from fans who said my outburst caused their grandparent or friend to be vaccinated, and to me, that's worth it. While we're talking about vaccines, I want to be clear about my views on what you should do if you're on the fence. Talk to your doctor. That's what I did. I talked through the vaccine with my doctor, and he told me it was definitely the right move, that we knew COVID could be deadly, and I got both shots. I have been perfectly healthy, and the best part is I've been able to go back to mostly my normal life, and soon I'll be talking to my doctor about a booster shot. The best argument I can make for this vaccine is that I want our economy booming, and I don't want this virus to slow us down ever again. I doubt any of you do either. Listening to your doctor can be the difference between life and death. Believe me, I know. My mother had the same congenital heart issue that I have in her aortic valve. I had my first surgery to repair it in 1997. They told me I need to get it replaced again, and you probably remember my screwed up heart surgery a few years ago. My mother was a different story. The only reason the doctors checked my heart initially was because they found the aortic defect in my mother and knew I might have the same issue. But she didn't want to listen to the doctors and have it repaired. She told me, when God wants me, he can take me. I debated and I debated with her. I told her God might have inspired the surgeon who knew how to fix it. I tried everything. We were lucky. She made it to 76 and she got to meet my kids and see me on movie sets and meet American presidents with me. I always made sure my mother felt like a queen because that's what she deserved. But one day she went to visit my father's grave like she did every week, and she just collapsed. Her heart failed her. A part of me will always think if she had listened to the doctor, she might still be here. She might have even gotten to meet her first great-grandchild. It reminds me of an old story of the man who sat on his roof during a huge flood. A rowboat came by and offered to rescue him, but he said, God will take care of me. Then a motorboat came by, then a helicopter, same thing. When the guy drowned and got to heaven, he asked God how he could have let him down. And God said, I sent you a rowboat, a motorboat, and a helicopter. What else could I do? And then he also mentions Bill Phillips, who got COVID and said he lost 70 pounds of muscle. And he's trying to get better now. So, yeah, that was all part of Arnold's newsletter. I don't want to read the whole thing because it's very long, and we want to get to our interview here. But I thought Arnold explained himself very well. A lot of people who are protesting Arnold, I think they think they're just jumping on the bandwagon, but you've got to remember what Arnold has done for the sport of bodybuilding, and it's just incredible. I don't think anyone has done more. So he did misspeak and knows that he misspoke, and he should have said it a different way, but I don't think that's, in my opinion, I don't think it's right to cancel him and to totally discredit him. I think with cancel culture society we live in is a little crazy, but that's just my opinion. And you guys have yours. All right, and before we get to our interview with Tom Terwilliger, Phil Williams, and Tony Pearson, I do want to mention our friend Scott Barron, who was one of our generous Patreon donors and a big supporter of the show. He did have his heart surgery, and speaking of Arnold, it was the same kind of heart surgery that Arnold had, where they repaired a defective aortic valve, and Scott is doing well. he had a successful surgery and he sounds like he's healing up quickly. He posted it on Facebook right after it happened. So congratulations, Scott, on a successful surgery, and we wish you all the best in your recovery. All right, let's get to our interview with Tom Terwilliger, Phil Williams, and Tony Pearson. This is part two of our interview where we talk about bodybuilding in the 1980s. Here we go. What about you, Phil? Did you have any doubts when you were going ready for that 85 Nationals?
Oh, yeah. I'll go back a little further than that. In 83, I was living in Sweden. I left California and moved to Sweden in 82. In 83, they had a show, it was Halmstad Open, European Open Championships. And it was in Halmstad, Sweden, where they make Yoliko plates, right? So they put the show on. It was a big show. It was a week before the IFBB Mr. Europe. So I went into the show, and there were two guys back there in my class, the light heavyweight class. I remember weighing into that about 194. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, who's the guest poser? These two Swedish guys. And and this guy came up and he said, they think you're the guest poser. And
I'm like, ah, I love really? It.
And they found out I was in the show and they dropped out. So, yeah, it's crazy. So I was lucky enough to win the light heavyweight, and I beat the Mr. Europe, IFBB Mr. Europe winner that year, who won it a week after that show, Christer Eriksson. Mm-hmm. So from there, I started getting guest posings all over Scandinavia. Mm. I mean, I was guest posing every other week. And of course, this wouldn't have happened in the U.S. And it never did. Not like it did in Europe. It took off in Europe. And so I made quite a bit of money, did well. So I decided to train for the 84 USA. So there was a guy who ran a club called Baltic Club Gym. He came up to me. He goes, you're going to win everything. You're going to win the USA. You're going to win the Nationals, and you're going to win the universe. He goes, the universe is going to be here in 85. You're going to be in it. And I just looked at him.
Wow.
And I said, okay. I said, you think so? He goes, yeah, I think so. He goes, I know so. He goes, as a matter of fact, I want you to come to my office after your workout. And I went to his office after the workout, and he gave me like 10,000 crones. He goes, here, I'm going to sponsor you. And he wow. handed me, you know, like a envelope full of money. And I went, holy shit, he is serious. So I started training for the USA in 84 in Sweden. I came over 3 months before and went to Port Hueneme, California. I couldn't afford to go to Venice. And I had a friend up there who let me stay with him. And he and I both trained for the USA together. So going into the USA, of course, that wasn't a pro qualifier in 84. But it was the second biggest show in the NPC.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I get there and we're on backstage and I'm called out. I'm thinking, well, I'm doing pretty good. Maybe I'm going to place in the top four or five. And ended up winning, beating Lee Labrada by 1 point. I saw him backstage. I didn't think he was a problem. Seeing him backstage and on stage, oh boy, totally different body.
Yeah.
And I saw him under the light. I went, holy shit. And Mike Christian ran up, came backstage. He goes, it's really close. It's really close. I said, how close? He goes, well, real close. And I won by 1 point, of course.
Wow.
So winning the 84 USA overall, of course, made me the man going into the 85 Nationals, or one of the top people. So from there, I focused, went back to Sweden, trained there for about 6 to 8 months, and then came back to the U.S., back to Port Hueneme or Oxnard, California, to train for the Nationals. Mm-hmm. And from there, I mean, I remember going in the show with some confidence because I'd won the USA. And plus, of course, I was getting a lot of positive energy from people who are saying, man, you look crazy. You look crazy. And I'm thinking, wow, okay. And I mean, I wasn't that confident, but my confidence started to build going into it. And by the time we got to the Nationals in October, that October in 85, luckily enough, I did the right things to get ready, showed up. And like Tom said, we were the first two that went out. I think we were out there for no more than maybe 5 or 10 minutes. And they said, go stand in the back. And we never left the back. That was it. We were there the whole time.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, it was an easy, I say this in a sense, it was the easiest show I've ever won because I really didn't do prejudging.
Yeah.
And ended up, fortunately enough, winning the show 7-0 in the weight class and in the overall. So I was very confident going into the World Championships 3 weeks later. But 3 weeks is a long time.
Yeah.
I did everything I could. Traveled to Sweden like 10 days before the World Championships. And just for some reason, whatever it may have been exhaustion. I'm sure it was that, along with who knows. I didn't show up at prejudging as sharp as I could have. I wasn't quite 100%. But by the night show, had Samir help me out with Aldactone. I think it was a diuretic. Mm-hmm. And I shed the water. And at the night show, I was almost 100%, maybe 98%.
Yeah.
And from there, I remember being very disappointed, coming back to the States. And there people were saying, oh, I thought you were going to win. Da, 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 da. And I'm like, well, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And I went to see in 84 after the USA. It's funny. We're talking about sponsorships. I went to see Joe. Jerry Branum gave me a ride up there. And I went to Joe and I started talking to Joe. We started talking. I talked about George Turner, which he and George had a fallout. I don't know if that had anything to do with his decision to help me out or not. But he says, well, this is what I can do for you. He goes, I can't sponsor you. He said, but I can do this. When you get into shape again, I'll pay you $300 per interview. And I'm thinking, get in shape again.
$300
per interview. Or per, what would you call it, any training type of, you know how you show the
training article, yeah,
articles.
Right.
$300 per article. And I'm thinking, that's not much. That's not much.
Even in the 80s, that wasn't much.
No. I went back to him after I won the Nationals. Of course, taking second in the USA, in the World Championships, I spoke with him again. And I said, well, what do you think that we could do this? And it was the same thing. He goes, this is what I'll do. The same thing, remember? He goes, I'll pay you $300 per article. Once you get back in shape again, I'm thinking, I never spoke to the man again after that.
Wow.
So, going into my first pro show, I went to St. Louis to train at George's. Best gym in the country at that time. Yeah. No matter where you went, best gym in the country. Had everything imaginable and two or three of everything. And, of course, it was hard to get along with George. George was a nightmare, and he knew I was getting ready for a show. He wanted me to work for him full-time. On a low-carb, low-calorie diet, and it just didn't work out. So I started doing personal training in another gym a guy took me to, and it was easy. And George found out, and that's when we almost got into the fight that we did, and I had to leave. I was getting ready for the 87 night of the champions. I was about 8 or 9 weeks away, and that all fell apart. Mm-hmm. So from there, I went to Florida and prepared for what was coming in 88, and that was the Chicago Pro.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
let me say this real quick, just as as a side note. I'm glad you didn't make the 87 night of the champions, because I would have come in eighth instead of seventh. I appreciate the boost.
Not training around George, I would have probably been dead last. Or in a mental institute. Or in prison.
Yeah.
For killing him.
George would make you crazy. That's what they have.
Oh, my. Getting ready for a show around that man was an impossibility.
And that was the last time you saw him, right, Phil, when you guys almost got in that fight?
Oh, yeah. He locked the door at the last second when I was about to grab it. I'm glad he locked that door.
Yeah.
I have a love-hate relationship for George. And it's funny to this day, because I go into the gym and I think the same thoughts that George said about some of the stupidity. Right. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm like George.
Right.
I'm like George. He rubbed off on me. I'm cursed.
I'm the same way. I look around and I feel like an old man. I'm like, look at these young kids, and
they tie up machines, they get their cameras out. My God, you got the girls that get on the Smith machine and tie it up for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Or any equipment in there.
Yeah.
Doing booty exercises.
I love now when you ask people like how many sets they got, they go, I don't know, I just started.
Yeah.
No idea how many sets are going to do,
What the answer we used to have would be, I've got three sets. Work in.
Yeah, work in, right.
They don't
understand work in.
You know what I mean?
if you ask them to work in, they're like, okay.
Oh, they have no clue now. No clue. And it's always an inconvenience just to ask them how many sets, because the headset's got to come out.
Of course.
The only guy, it looks like he knows what he's doing in the gym, and they're still bothered but that I'm asking him a question.
Yeah.
It's a different world now.
It's a little different.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Hey, Tony, all those pro shows you did in the IFBB, you were in the IFBB for a long time. Are there any ones that stand out, you know, as far as good memories? I just watched the 84 Olympia recently, and you had a great routine there where you did the Michael Jackson thing, and the crowd was really good at that show.
Yeah, that was my first time in the Olympia. So 84.
That was your first one? Oh, first Olympia? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So it was, that was fun. I have to say that's the most fun I've had in an IFBB show, I think.
I love that contest because it seemed like it had a combination of all these new guys coming up, but it still had a lot of the old guys. Like it had Dickerson and Sergio, of course, came back, and Boyer Coe was in it. Bill Grant was in it. So it had a lot of the guys from the 70s, but a lot of the new guys from the 80s too, all combining.
Yeah, it was a very tough lineup.
Very tough lineup.
So that's the first time Lee Haney won.
Yeah.
So we're all backstage getting pumped up, and we looked at Lee, and we go, okay, now who's second? Because we all knew.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
What did you think of Sergio at that show?
I think he looked amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, he was Mr. Olympia in 67, 68, 69. We're talking all of that 1980. 84. I mean, how many years of that has passed? He still looked amazing.
And he was a myth, and there was so much hype with him going in that show.
True. And then in Belgium, I was in it, you know, for the second time.
Mm-hmm.
Placed 12th both times. But the situation there was, if you really want to know, you know, they changed the rules. And you have to make top 10. To automatically requalify.
Yeah.
So when I got 12, I go, okay. So that means I got to compete in shows to try to requalify.
Right.
That's what that was. So I go, I can't make top 10. Okay. So I realized what was going on. Come on. So, but it was, I think New York was a lot of fun. In Belgium too was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Of course, the one I won in Denver was, you know, was fun, but. You know, it's like I said, in my mind, I knew what was happening. So you have to be able to deal with that. When a person said that remark to me in Australia, I said to myself, you know, I'm not a competitor anymore. I'm going to make some money.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And within a moment of listening to him, my mind switched.
Mm.
Okay, I'll just make some money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you want to win. Of course, you want a competitor. You want to be, you know, you want to win the contest. But if he said I can get paid, okay, I'll make some money.
Yeah.
That's how I managed to continue on, because a lot of people just walked away and said, you know, forget it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to win.
Did you get a lot of satisfaction out of just doing a good routine and hearing the audience reaction? Because you got a lot of that.
And I got a lot of positive response from it, too.
Yeah.
So many people said, I cannot believe you're back. You can't win. You know, I've heard that so many times. You know, everyone can pair very well on the front, but they get weak on the back. Yes, my calves are weak, and I admit it. We all have weak body parts.
Mm-hmm.
But they dwell on my calves. So from the back, I know that I should have won more shows, because now social media have allowed me to see some of the champions' backs. The pictures are surfing now. I go, oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
From the front, they match you, not from the back. And I go, okay. And I'm 100% sure I should have won. No question.
Yeah.
Because of my condition and my presentation.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm being real. If I get beat, I get beat.
Yeah, I tell you what, though, Tony, on the other side of that coin is there was, you know, maybe Rick Valente, but there were a few other people that had as much publicity. I mean, you had the whole Miami Vice thing going on with Barry DeMatteo. I mean, you had lots of stuff going on in those magazines, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a plus for you for sure, man. Everybody knew who Tony Pearson was. Everybody.
I appreciate it. And, you know, what did it was the Michael Jackson thing, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I got in stage in 81, and Michael did the nose job, then I did the nose job, and then I did an article with Rick Wayne. So Ricky Wayne was in my corner there for a while. He gave me a lot of push. And it wasn't from Joe, and it wasn't from
oh, what's his name? Oh my God. Corey Evison's Jeff wasn't from Jeff.
Jeff Everson, yeah. Editor in chief. Right.
It was from Wayne. So he got me the magazine as much as he could. The one cover that I did get from the Weeders was through Wick Wayne. He organized the whole thing.
Mm.
But when he came out with this phrase, you look like Michael Jackson, and they wrote it and they put it in the next, mm. the article, it just took off. I got a lot of publicity because of that, because Michael was hot in the 80s.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And I resembled him a bit. And then being able to pose the show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I got a lot of publicity, which was great. It helped me, you know, to get seminars and exhibitions. But, yeah, it's I enjoy competing. I enjoy the stage.
Yeah. You
know? To me, it's a performance.
Yeah.
No matter what's going on in your mind and what's going on behind the scene, it's just showtime. You got to do your show.
Yeah.
I remember I look back at some pictures now, and it's like, you know, many times, you know, when you're competing in these shows, certainly that Olympia with Boyko and all these guys that would come back, the myth, you remember because you're on stage with guys. I remember the first time I competed up against Robbie Robinson, a United Champion. I was like, freaking Robbie Robinson. Holy crap. And then I'm looking around. I need somebody to put an oil on my back. I'm like, hey, Robbie. I'm like, freaking Robbie Robinson, put an oil on my back. This is nuts, right? But I know that you and I have competed together, and I can't remember what shows, but maybe it was on a Grand Prix. It was something. Pro World, because yeah. I remember seeing it. It's like, I forget who I've competed against. I've seen pictures like us. Yeah, we were pulled out together.
Yes, yes.
But I don't know what show it was. It's like, I don't remember who I was competing against most of the time.
I, that thing of the Night of the Champion or something was a Grand Prix Pro Show. Yeah. Because I've seen
it. You competed in Night of the Champions a couple of years, didn't you?
I did. Quite a few. Yeah.
I think you were in an 87, right, Tony?
I was in 86 and 87.
Yeah,
might have been 87.
Yeah,
and then I think I did it again in 89 and 91. So, but it was somewhere. Yeah, it might have been that one. Yep.
Hey Tom, when you were doing those routines that you know you're well known for now, you know, like that 89 Olympia, did you realize the impact that was going to have when you were doing it, or was just do it that you didn't really realize?
I want to say yes, but not really. I mean, it was just. I guess what was going through my mind is just like, I'm not going to win the Olympia. I already knew. And I hate to have that attitude, but I knew I was a realist in many respects. You know, I'm 100 and maybe 200 pounds in great shape for the Olympia. The guys that were, I was up against, I knew I was hoping I was striving to be in the top five, but I knew I wasn't going to win the Olympia. But I wanted to be remembered and I wanted to have an impact. More than anything, I wanted to have an impact. I wanted to some degree, make the audience feel what I felt the first time I saw Ed Corney post.
Yeah, okay.
And I wanted to put shivers up people's spine. And I didn't know if it would have that impact or not, but I knew it's just like, this is how I'm going to make a mark to a degree. And really put a lot of time and energy and effort into it. My training partner, Ronnie Starantino, really was instrumental in helping me manifest something really great, but the amount of hours and time I put in and the music blend was always from, it was something that most people hadn't heard. You know, I didn't want music that somebody else did, you know, the routine before, the routine after.
Right.
I always chose music from like Black Rain or Lost Boys or some kind of, usually a Hollywood production music of some kind.
Okay.
And, that had an emotion. That the music was written to designed to invoke an emotion. And so I wanted to back that up with the routine and tell a story. But to answer your question, I didn't know. I hoped and prayed that it would have that kind of impact because that's truly, I mean, that experience when I had, you know, seeing Ed Corney pose, it was just like, it put shivers up my spine. And it's just like, if I can have that impact on somebody.
Yeah.
You know? And it was like,
I'm glad you mentioned emotion because I think that's what's lacking in today's routine. Sometimes I'll see guys do a good routine where it's well choreographed and good posing, but it doesn't have the emotion. That's what's lacking today. You very rarely see that.
I should tell that story, the up and down. You know, that routine was about triumph and failure and ultimately the high tribunal condemning me to death. And it was just like, whoa, and I'm electric. And it just like, it was like that. I wanted them to feel that, you know?
Yeah.
And I certainly felt it as I was doing it and practicing it every time.
Yeah.
So and I still get some great feedback, you know, from it that, wow, that was powerful. So, yeah, I guess it did have somewhat of an impact. I didn't know it would for sure. But, yeah, thanks for bringing it up. I appreciate it. That means a lot.
whoever's posing have to bring that emotion with them.
Yeah.
For the audience to feel it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always use Michael's music because it was so intense.
Oh, it was great, wasn't it?
Dramatic. Yeah. It made you, well, you feel something.
It was entertaining, too.
The whole time, so they could see I was having fun.
Yeah, it was entertaining, yeah.
That's what pulls them in.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised more bodybuilders don't do that because, you know, getting ready for a show is emotional. I mean, you have to sacrifice so much, all the discipline. We all go through a gamut of emotions, you know, with the dieting because, you know, you go on low carbs. You're testing yourself, you know.
Yeah,
you want hard training and everything and losing and then trying to win. So it is emotional. It is an emotional journey. I don't know why more people can't bring that to the stage and convey that, you know.
Yeah. Well, some of the women are doing that today, but not a lot of the guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not bringing the emotion because the judges doesn't judge it anymore. I realize that was important. That's part of the routine. You could actually win the show. You can outwork that guy. If you can actually bring the house down with your posing, you might get that 1 point win.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They judge night shows now.
Part of the judging now is like you guys don't have to pose. You know, you walk across the stage, you hit a couple of shots, and you do this to the crowd.
There you go.
That's all you got to do. There's no emotions.
Right. Can you imagine if it was close at a pro show and one guy comes out and does this killer routine and gets a standing ovation? You don't think the judges are going to notice that? He's not going to get the edge? You know?
Exactly.
Let me say this, Tony, because I think probably, you know, there's always disappointing moments like you, Tony, and certainly of the universe for you, brother. It's like there's always those disappointing moments. And for me, one of the most disappointing moments was actually having put that much work into the routine and bringing the house down. And this is when they were still judging. They were including the posing in the routine. I forget which one it was. It was 89 or 91 competing against Al Beckles and Sonny Schmidt in Niagara Falls, where I took third and qualified for the Olympia. It's interesting because I beat in the symmetry and the muscularity rounds, beat Albert, and then they gave it to him on the posing. He beat me, and you remember the Albert Beckel shuffle. You know what I mean? Yeah. I love Albert. I have massive respect.
The dance.
You know, but he's dancing. You know, like, he beat me in the posing round and won the contest as a result. So, I mean, I never had any sour grapes over it, but it was just like I realized don't count on that, man.
Yeah.
Entertain the audience, but don't count on it. You know what I mean? That was one of the more disappointing moments. It was like, what? If they had given it to him on the muscularity round, freaking Albert Beckles in shape, man. You know?
Yeah.
But the posing, I was like, what?
Yeah, I want to finish off with, you know, these guys today, we talked about how big they are and stuff. And, you know, I don't know if it's because of social media, but I'm seeing like every week somebody's dying, you know, whether it's these younger bodybuilders or, you know, and it seems like a lot of these guys are young or in their 40s or 50s. It seems like in the 50s is when a lot of these guys are going. Mm. And, you know, we come from an era where we saw like Reg Park was older and, you know, Jack LaLanne and all these guys, you know, lived a long life. What do you think of the sacrifices a lot of these guys today are taking in order just to be at that level?
I can't even imagine. I can't imagine what they're doing chemically.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I would have no idea. I haven't kept up with that end of it. I mean, but it must be tremendous.
It's a lot.
I think.
High dose.
It has to be.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that when you look at them, I looked at some of the pro shows, like the Tampa and then some of the other shows. You had one in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And even the one you had in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at them all through front double biceps, they all really look the same.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. I mean, they all look big, wide, thick, poor shape. You don't see any real aesthetic value or any beauty. No real intricate detail, especially from the back. Everybody's double bicep from the back looks almost the same. Mm-hmm. I mean, it'd be very hard to judge. I don't know how they do that, but I've clearly figured out a way. Their heart is rock and vascular. But, you know, I don't see the beauty. I mean, when I was training for shows, you kind of trained for beauty also. I'm looking at Samir Bhutt. I'm looking at Robbie Robinson. I looked at Tony Pearson. Aesthetic, beauty. I mean, these guys are big guys. They're big bone structures. I mean, they're huge. And I've seen a few in the gym, and it's like, holy shit. I don't know if they're on stage, but you said 245, 255, something like that, at like 5'9", 5'10".
Bigger than that sometimes.
That's crazy, man.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at him and it's just like, if I were a kid and I saw that today, I wouldn't want to look like a mutant or a gargoyle.
Yeah.
And they look very gargoyle-ish to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm
it's interesting. Everyone, and listen, I've got thin hair. I'm nothing to say about that. But everybody's bald, too. Everybody's bald now.
Yeah.
It's just across the board. So they all look the same from the back. And it's kind of like, and again, whether or not it's the chemistry that's doing this or not, but it's kind of like going to Beverly Hills to a nice restaurant and looking across the room at all the women. What? They all pretty much have the same plastic surgeon and all have a similar, like, it's like they all look the same.
Yeah.
And the guys in bodybuilding are starting to look like that too. And maybe it's from doing similar chemistry. I don't know.
It's funny. Right. I wouldn't know how to judge it. I would look and then I hate to say this. What's with the tattoos these days?
Yeah.
What I'm looking at, and I'm trying to figure out what the tattoo is. I'm not looking at your physique anymore. I'm looking at, what is that? Is that a dragon? You know what I mean? Or whatever, a lion or a leopard? It's crazy.
Yeah.
I went to the Arnold's Classic after 30 years in 2018. It was because I competed in the first two. And then, yeah, I did. Yeah. I came in sixth and I came in a sixth or fifth or something. Both times. I mean, I knew what's going to happen before I get there. So, but then I went back 30 years later, the 30 year anniversary in 2018, I think it was. I'm sitting there watching the pros on stage. I'm up close and I go, I couldn't judge it. If you asked me to judge it, I couldn't judge it because condition wise, I go, they're not in shape.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. I can have my opinion. They're not in shape. They're not really sharp. I don't see striations on top of striations.
No.
Intricate detail.
I don't see any leg cuts where you can drop quarters in them.
No. Even the abs, they're lacking abs.
And the thickness through the waist. I don't see that chiseled
eight-pack,
six-pack.
You don't see the Muhammad McAway, Tony Pearson abs anymore.
Yeah, it's almost like the muscles expand so much, it's losing that. Because I'm betting those guys are every bit as lean as we were.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's something going on with the muscle expansion that's eliminating some of that deep separation, those cross striations that were once the most sought after aspect of it all. You know, now it's just the size and
it's the size. The
size is crazy.
So do you think in conditioning wise they are as good as we were, but I'm looking for the lines and the cuts and right. I want to see some cuts going places no one has got on the stage.
And that's what's going on.
Striations everywhere, striations on top of striations. Then I know you're in shape.
Yeah,
you don't see that.
No,
you know someone's listening right now saying, look at this, bitch. I got it right here. What are you talking about? You gotta be.
It just seems like there's different conditions for the different classes. You know, like with classic physique, it seems like they are looking at that.
That's true.
More of the classic shape and the definition.
They're closer to where we were back in the day, the classic physique for sure.
Yeah. But I bet if somebody like Frank Zane or Samir, when he went into the Olympia, if they went into the Olympia today, they just get overlooked. You're like, you're way too small, you know.
Yeah, sure.
I don't care what kind of physique they had. It's just they would be.
I think the thing that bothers me more than anything else about today's pro bodybuilders and even coming up the ranks as amateurs, the physiques, yeah. But even in the classic physique division, could you imagine, guys? Come on, could you imagine Tony Pearson, Phil Williams, or Samir Banu getting up on stage and putting their arms out like this? Where the hell did that come from and why? I mean, Arnold on stage would stand, it looked statuesque.
Stand there, right? Yeah.
Natural.
Yeah.
Nobody was doing this. It's just silly looking today. And they're distorting the physique even further as a result of that. That should be completely discouraged by the judging. And I don't know why it's continuing.
Yeah, aesthetically, they're killing it. Aesthetically.
Oh, it's dead. It died.
It's already dead. It's not being killed.
No, it's funny.
You know, Muhammad McCowan, myself, Samir, and Phil, we get on stage and just sort of relax pose from head to toe. And just by standing there, it was all there.
Yes. Not over exaggerated.
No, you're right.
Yeah. Well, it's like they're trying to out-muscle each other instead of out-class each other. There's no real quality or class. It's just a size. So I'm going to stand there like this. And like I said, they all look the same because they all stand the same way.
And pose the same way.
Yeah. Pose the same way. Yes.
The only guy I would really look forward to seeing was
Ronnie.
No, they just went up. He was competing against Phil Heath all the time. Kai Green.
Kai had it.
Because he had an original routine. He had something different and unique to bring to the stage. And I always look forward to watching his routine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This guy's going to perform, and I'm waiting to see it. Bodybuilding is a performance. People pay money to see you perform. They want something unique from every competitor. You have to be creative. And that's what bodybuilding is. You just can't look the same. What happened to bodybuilders' biceps today?
Yeah.
What happened to the peak in the bicep today?
Yeah.
Massive triceps, all weak biceps. I don't get it.
Good question.
I know why. Because they don't curl anymore. They drag curl. They do a curl like this.
Yeah.
How do you get the peak? Do a preacher curl. Get on the preacher curl, guys. Take a real barbell and live on it.
And do some concentration curls for crying out loud. You know? I mean,
but to build a bicep, get on the preacher bench and stay on it. Just live on it. Don't ever get off of it.
God, Tony, remember Eddie Ortiz? Was it Eddie? Freddie, thank you. Remember those pictures? I mean, it's just like freaking bicep.
Bicep on top of a bicep, right?
Yes. Those guys were amazing back then, man.
They also got the site injections and the synthol and all that today.
And who knows how much of that is being used?
Right.
That's distorting the physiques.
Hey, Tony, you mentioned Kai Green. What do you think of like his posing, which is performance and it's entertaining compared to classical stuff like McAway and Dickerson and things like that?
Well, it's completely different. It's art because he's unpredictable what he's going to do next. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's an entertaining part. And of course, he was in great shape.
Oh, yeah.
Doing his headstand, all this.
Yeah, he was amazing. Yeah, for sure.
Right. It's very unique. It is an original.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are his moves. Those are his marks.
Nobody could move like him.
No one. I mean, he's a great dancer. I mean, I watch his YouTube channel. He's dancing all the time.
Yeah.
I kind of took after Zane a little bit. I had Jimmy Caruso to teach me for 3 hours in Canada one day.
Wow, really?
Yes. And he says, I'm going to teach you your knee, your toe, your hand. This should be. And I learned a lot in that 3 hours. And of course, Keen helped me a lot. Robbie helped me a lot. Ken Waller helped me a lot. So I just spent a lot of time posing. Positioning myself in every pose to make myself bigger.
Yeah.
So that, it's an art form. You're an artist. Mm-hmm. And every exercise that I do, I'm doing it for a reason because I want the cuts to come out in a certain way.
So
when I do cuts right to the front, I'm going to show cuts going all different directions.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So everything I do at the gym is for a reason. When you look at my picture, the cut's going here, there, striations here, there. It was designed.
Yeah.
No accident.
Right.
The other thing that's missing today with the guys, and again, you know, they're all holding the out here, and it's just like they're like can't even breathe. They're so flexed. And then when they do hit the poses, it doesn't really look like anything's happening. Remember back in the day, it was just like, boom, stuff would pop. You would open it, you would relax it, and boom, hit it.
Yes.
Now it's just like it's a constant flex, and
they don't project.
Don't project it. Mm-hmm. You know, relax it and pop it. You know,
when you stand on the line up, you know, you look fairly small, but when you hit the shot, you grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Right. Another shot, you grow.
Right.
That's what people like freaks out about. He looks small, but every time he flex, thing just comes out.
Oh,
yeah.
You and Phil's back, the last spread, was just like, bam. I was like, what?
Where
the hell is that coming?
That's what bodybuilding is. You got to project.
No.
Yeah. But these guys don't grow in a pose. Thank you. Stand and relax, and you go out and you hit a front lat spread and you explode.
Yeah.
They look the same when they're standing relaxed, and when they pose, nothing happens.
Yeah.
Nothing really happens. I mean, they're huge anyway.
Right.
So when they hit a pose, it's like, well, nothing really happens. And sometimes they look worse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen guys today that look better in their relaxed pose as a lat spread than they do in the lat spread.
Yeah.
Your arms are now even weirder.
You know why? Because they don't practice their
pose. They don't practice their pose. Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's not being judged, why would you?
Yes, sure.
In a sense. I mean, you might practice after your workout. They go in the mirror and do this and that, and then they go home.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know about you guys, and you guys were both great posers. I could have been a better poser than I was. I remember being on a low-calorie, low-fat, low-carb diet and going home and sitting in a chair, and to stand up out of a chair took everything I had. Imagine me going through a routine. So I used to go put on the music and go through the routine in my head.
Yeah.
And then I would physically get up and kind of copy it without really flexing, because I didn't have the energy to even flex. And that's how I practice posing.
Yeah.
And I'd do that for an hour a night and listen to the music all the time, so I knew what pose I was going to be in when that particular part of the music came on. You know what I'm saying? Where it was timed. And I learned how to pose that way. And it was a funny thing, Tommy, because when we were at the Nationals, you went out right before me. I was right behind you.
Right,
I don't know if you remember this. And you went out and posed your ass off. What is it? You posed to...
I think it was...
Songs in my head. Oh, no.
Phil Collins.
Phil Collins. Yeah. You posed your ass off. You got a massive ovation. And I said, oh, shit. I got to follow this. I said, oh. And I went out there. And I was lucky enough to time it right and hit it just the way I wanted to.
Yeah.
But, man, I mean, the posing's incredible, man. Posing's hard. You ever pass out? After the Chicago Pro, once I won the show, no, after the pre-posing round, I went in the backstage and literally passed out. I didn't have that. I had no energy going through that routine. I don't even remember the routine.
Well, you know what? I mean, one of the things that helped me polish my my craft as far as posing was working with Brian Moss, Gladys Portuguese. By the way, Tony, you won the mixed pairs, I think it was the Olympia, the world champion, mixed pairs champion up in Toronto. Who were you posing with? Was it with
Juliette Bergman?
Juliette Bergman. Yeah, I was in that contest with Gladys Portuguese. I don't remember if we
met her. Yeah, I remember. Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So, I got hooked up with Better Bodies, and Brian put together this entire, model agency. I did a lot of commercials, but we also did a lot of, posing exhibitions, and they weren't really posing expeditions. They were shows, just like what we've talked about.
Right.
We put together what was like shows, dramatic shows in Roman gladiator clothes and all these different things.
Remember that, yeah.
And we would tour the nightclubs in Manhattan.
Wow.
And it really helped me, number one, become more expressive and more daring with the posing. It was just like I lost any inhibition that I might have had around posing because of those audiences and that experience, you know? But the reason I bring that up is because one of the guys that we used to, that was in the tour with us, his name was Jeff. I can't remember his last name. A black guy, great bodybuilder, won the East Coast, won some other stuff. We were all in the green room, right? Preparing to go on stage and do our act. And he had like a show like the next day, a bodybuilding contest, like the Mr. Metropolitan or something. And we've got him in the corner and he's hitting his pose. He's posing. We're like, come on, man, bring it up. And we're like, encourage him. And he hits the most muscular and he's going and he's going and he's going. And all of a sudden you see his eyes roll back in his head and it just goes out.
Oh, no.
Goes down hard, man.
Oh, my God.
In the middle of his most muscular pose.
Oh,
passed out. Passed out, man.
Posing is a lot of work.
A lot of guys don't do it.
It's not easy.
Right. Hey,
a quick story, guys. In 1977, Zane won the first Mr. Olympia, right? The first one. And Robbie said, we're friends now. He goes, hey, you want to go see Frank Zane guest post tonight in Orange County? I go, yeah. We get to hang out with Robbie Robinson. Come on. But yeah, let's go, of course. So we're sitting in the first row, and Frank's standing there waiting for his music to start. He wasn't standing straight on. He was kind of standing to the side a little bit. So I looked at him and going, because I'd seen him in the magazine before, and I go, he doesn't look so big, I said to myself in my own head. And then his music started. And every shot that he hit, you know the Zane moves, he got bigger and bigger and bigger. So now I'm sitting at the edge of my seat going, oh, my God.
Wow.
And I go, that's Mr. Olympia. So that drew me in even more. 1977, that really pulled me in. It's an art, man. You got to be an artist.
Yeah.
You got to pose your ass off.
Yeah.
Frank was an artist in that respect. He knew exactly how to bring out his best and what he looked good in, and he would avoid anything else. I remember hearing early on that bodybuilding in many respects is an illusion, and certainly Frank Zane personified that. It's an illusion that you want to create. I mean, Frank would look 220 pounds on stage, you know, when he was in the right light and the right shape, and he would pose in such a way that you never knew he had any weaknesses and any flaws.
Right.
It wasn't that big. And he created an illusion up there. Yeah.
I heard his wife, Christine, would take Polaroids back in those days every week. Every week of his posing routine, put them all on the table. So week after week, he'd go through his poses, and he'll see where that toes off, that hands off. The ab wasn't flexed, the pec was not right. And then he just mastered all of that. So when he came on stage, you could see it in his face. He knew exactly where he was on everything he did. It was written in his face. Every move he did, you know, you see it.
Yeah.
When I saw him live with Robbie that day, 1977. I had no titles. I was Mr. Venice Beach. So, so I'm sitting there going, this is art.
Yeah.
You got to become an artist. You got to perform your ass off if you want to win.
Yeah.
I realized that. He was just guest posing. It was amazing.
I interviewed Frank last year, and he told me something interesting about those pictures you mentioned, Tony, about his wife, Christine, taking the pictures every week. He said he knew exactly what he really looked like. He said most bodybuilders only look in a mirror, so they're seeing themselves reverse. They're not seeing themselves as they really look like. They're seeing a reverse image of themselves. Mm-hmm. But he knew exactly what he looked like because he would study those photos from the front, the back, the side, and he would know exactly what he really looked like as the contest got closer. So when he got up there, he was totally confident because he knew what he was presenting.
And it showed on his face every time. He just knew where...
He said most bodybuilders didn't really know what they were presenting to the audience.
I'll tell you what's funny, guys. When you practice posing in front of a mirror, which is a mistake in a sense, not really, but it is. There's no mirror on stage. And I had a lot of guys run into the problem that they were able to practice in the mirror, but once they didn't have that in front of them,
they were lost.
They were lost. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I agree.
So when you're practicing, you're posing, it's about you have to feel your muscles.
Yeah.
Up front. You only got a split second to hit that shot before there's the next pose, please. So you hit the shot and you flex everything at one time. You transition to the next pose. It's a feeling. So Frank knew exactly where the feeling would be here. Exactly where he was. And I became that way too, in a way. I knew exactly when I was on that shot. Don't need the mirror, on that shot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's so much practice. So much practice.
Yeah. Yeah.
We did that too. And I remember learning that from Tony and some of the guys and, you know, back at Future Man Gym, is that you had to practice your mandatories. Not everybody practiced the routines as much, but the mandatories, the compulsories, if you didn't practice those, and we've all seen it. We've all seen the guy walk out on stage in the lineup that looks like, whoa, he's going to crush it. And then goes into the poses, and he's terrible. He doesn't know how to hit a pose. His bicep is way up here. His lats is way down. It's just like the calves aren't flexed. Nothing's flexed. He's not bringing out his best because clearly he's never worked on it, you know?
Yeah.
And it takes hours and hours. It is a discipline without question, but it's a big part of the art. And I think that's certainly being lost today for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
I just want to mention something real quick especially for the audience and stuff. And I also want to extend my congratulations and admiration. Tony, you getting up. I mean, I said this before you got on that you and John are the only two people on this podcast at the moment that have the balls to say, hey, I'm going to get back on stage. I'm going to freaking do it, man. And you did it. And you did it. And you got back out there and you competed again and you freaking looked fantastic.
Thank you.
Represented, you know, I like to call us all, you know, second half rebels and renegades. And you represented that, man. And it was inspiring, bro. I just want you to know that.
Hey, Tony, could someone talk you into doing that again? Competing again? Has it crossed your mind?
No, I'm done. that last contest sent me a message. It's enough.
Yeah. That's enough.
Let me ask you, how was it training and dieting? You've always had a great metabolism. I remember we were in Germany. Who was the guy's name? Bernd Biederbeck. And he was taking you somewhere to guest pose, and you came into the locker room, and I went, holy shit. You looked like you were getting ready for a show. Wow. And you've always, and I'm sure it has to do with genetics and metabolism, but you can stay that muscular. And I don't know what your diet's like. If you diet year-round hard, I would have had to diet my ass off to stay in the condition you were in. I kid you not.
I was in that condition all the time. I was training twice a day.
Wow.
Every day, and I was living, I would cook my own food. So, no, yeah. I had to work. Yes, I had a fast metabolism, but I had to do the work. I was training twice a day, every day. And plus in Europe, if you're out of shape,
I know.
Word gets around really fast.
And you don't get any work.
That's right. You don't get to go back to Europe.
Right. Or you don't go back to the same place. But they right. talk a lot. So you're right.
They call you. Right. How did he look? Oh, really? Okay, good. Bye.
Absolutely so.
So,
absolutely,
you know, right. For me, it was like contest shape. I had to be in contest shape. They expected that.
Mm-hmm.
Spain, Germany, wherever I was at, they expected me to be in contest shape. I saw you in a magazine like this. And plus, I'm a small guy. When I'm not sharp, I'm nobody.
Yeah.
I had a small frame. And if I'm a little bit out of shape, it's not impressive at all. But I have to always be in top form to be impressive.
Well, you were for guest posings. I've never seen anything like that.
I appreciate it. Yeah. So, yeah.
I've seen some guys show up some of the top name guys, and you go,
I know. I always said to myself, I don't want the competitors to look better than I do. Come on.
For the evening. Yes. Yeah.
So there's a lot of pride on my side. I'm doing this for myself, too.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to hear the feedback. Man, he looks terrible. Oh,
hey.
God, no.
Hey, let me ask you guys something. Of all the guys today, do any of you favor anybody in particular? Of the guys competing now?
I don't know anybody.
I really don't follow it that
big Remy,
much.
That's it.
I wish Kai Greene would come back.
Yeah. I like the guy Cedric McMillan. Is he still around?
No. Yeah, he is, but he hasn't competed. I was going to say the same thing, so that was my choice, too.
He'll destroy everybody. If he came in 100% condition, there's your guy right there.
That's true. If he ever got really, really, really cut, you're right. If he really get, razor crazy cut, the guy who won a few years ago, my brain is, when you get 64, you get like this. He won a few years ago, won the Olympia. What's his name?
Sean Roden.
Phil? Sean Roden?
Sean Roden. Yes. Yeah. That was the best shape. I was so impressed with him.
I wish he would come back this year, but he's
not. I agree. So he posted his pictures 2 days before the show, and I zoomed in on it, and I go, he went all out. He gave it all. And I just, from zooming in, I go, he's going to win. I zoomed in on his pictures. This guy's really in shape.
Yeah.
And he admitted after he almost died.
Yeah.
There's a video. And I just from looking at that picture, I knew where he took it. He took it to the nowhere place.
Yeah.
He all out.
We call it death's doorstep.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Cedric has a full-time job with the Army.
Military, right?
Yeah, with the military. So I think that holds him back. But he also had an experience a couple of years ago where he had a problem. I think it was with diuretics. And he might have went to the hospital. I think ever since then, I think he's kind of held back a little bit. He's not going to go.
That's a terrible experience. Diuretics.
Yeah. And he's got a family, and he's more well-rounded, I think, some of the guys are, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
So what do you guys got going on? Anything you want to mention? Or?
Well, I just want to say this is my book, Driven.
All right.
It's on Amazon. And the audio book is also on Amazon. It just came out, my audio book.
Oh, okay. How's that doing, Tony?
It's going okay. You know, got to get the word out. People says, I don't want to read the book. I want to listen to the audio book. I said, okay. So I did, the audio book.
Yeah. I did that with my Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends book, too, and it's definitely kind of slow.
Yeah, exactly. So we're just kind of waiting for the documentary to come out. Please watch it, guys, and just.
Oh yeah, I can't wait.
I'm not vain or anything. Kids are suffering today.
Yeah.
And that's the platform I want to go on because I was one of those kids.
Yeah.
And if I could help just one child or one adult.
Yeah.
To come to terms with all that and face the demons.
Yeah.
To kind of move forward from it and, to inspire them. I mean, I was so fortunate to have people, those major legends like Ali and Arnold.
Yeah.
In my life, you know, just for a moment, but that's all you need is that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And for those words to come from Arnold's mouth, you can be, that made it, no matter what the critics, no matter what they wrote in the magazine,
but yes,
I could be.
Yeah.
And I did. It always stayed in my head. But I never thought I was good enough. Even when I won.
Yeah.
I was never good enough in my own head. Never.
Hmm.
That's why I continued to train like, so that I dropped dead. Who cares? I didn't care. You know, back in those days, we did some serious training.
Yeah.
I went through training partners pretty quickly until I started. Then me and Robbie would bump head toe to toe for a few shows, and we would laugh at each other because he's trying to burn me out. I'm trying to burn him out.
Yeah.
And I didn't relent.
Yeah.
So he wrote recently, you know, TP was the best training partner I ever had. Because I was young, I was crazy, I was wild, I was hungry, I was starving.
Yeah.
When you're starving, you train pretty hard.
Right.
I mean, you do that.
Stay hungry. Stay hungry.
Yeah. Absolutely.
How about you, Phil? You're doing, you said you're doing personal training now, right?
I'm doing personal training in Ventura County, the city of Ventura, in Ventura County, California, which is next to Oxnard. They're like cities that are side by side. Basically, I'm selling a high intensity program with low volume, high intensity, short duration. And from what I've seen so far, the two guys I've worked with, it's working very well for them.
Okay.
So you get 4 days a week to recover, 3 days a week of intensity. God, guys think that you grow in the gym. I said, no, you grow at rest, but they never rest. And these, I know guys who work 8 hour days that'll go in the gym 2 hours a night after work and have a physical job and still go in and try to put in 2 hours of work of training.
Yeah.
And of course they're choosing the wrong exercises. They're copying what they probably see on YouTube or anywhere else. And it's incredibly wrong. It's terrible. And so I'm going to be the guy to try to come in and set people straight on training, how the recovery works. And you know, I'm working with, like I said, two guys so far and they're both progressing very well. One guy's got a show in 6 weeks. So I'm helping him train and get ready for that.
Okay.
And they're getting stronger going into the show, training 3 days a week, and they're recovering. And of course, when you're on a low calorie, low fat, low carb diet, whatever they're using, you know, your energy level is limited. It's training to me is like an investment. It's an investment. It's like going to school. You go to college, that's an investment. You get into a relationship, it's an investment. It's time, money, and energy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so if you waste your time, money, and energy, if you're short, you're not going to get the results you're hoping for. So a lot of these people are making a poor investment by going to the gym and training and chronically overtraining.
Yeah, or doing the wrong stuff, like you said.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what I'm trying to push right now.
Okay. Is there any way people can reach you, Phil, if they hear this podcast? And they want
I've got cards around. I don't have anything right other than maybe my email, which is phil.enigma60@gmail.com.
But you're also on Instagram, too.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
It would be IFBB Pro_Phil Williams.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm trying to teach you. I'm sorry. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I will say this. Number one, thanks, John, for having me back, and I always appreciate it, man. I'm so glad I don't say something stupid enough that you never invite me back again. It may have happened on this show. I don't know. If I'm never invited again, I'll know I blew it. But I will say this. It's been an honor to be here with Tony and with Phil. And if you're in that area, in that Oxnard area, I mean, if you want to get in shape, listen, I've trained with some of the best bodybuilders, some of the toughest bodybuilders, some of the greatest trainers and training partners in the world. And I've trained with Phil, and I can't imagine you're going to find a better trainer to get you in shape who knows what he's doing. He's going to direct you with your nutrition. So if you're in that area, man, you'd be a fool not to make the proper investment. You're already investing the time and energy, you know, into it. get the right direction, get the right coaching along the way. And if you can't afford 3 days a week with Phil, do one, do twice a month, whatever it is, man, get the direction. And Phil's the guy to help you do that without question.
For me, you're doing personal training too, still, right?
Thank you, Tom.
Yes.
I do some training. Yeah. Tony, I mean that, man.
I'm at Yaks Fitness. Yaks, YAKS Fitness is a great gym here in Las Vegas. It's well equipped, very clean, and we have some good bodybuilders in there, and I got tons of clients. So that's where you can find me. Also, on IG, Tony Pearson 87, Instagram, Facebook, okay. Tony Pearson. I'm everywhere. Check out my website, TonyPearsonPersonalTraining.com.
Okay, hey, Tony. Let me ask you, Tony.
Yes.
A lot of gyms are open. Two gyms have opened in Vegas. Is that the Mecca now? You had
Harris Kyle and Hide.
Exactly. And then the other
The powerhouse gym. And you got the Dragon Lear.
Right. What's the guy's name?
Flex Lewis.
Sure.
Yes. I mean, it's all the pros are here. They're all
everybody seems to be out there, man.
This is the place. They're all here.
Yeah.
I just got here before they did, but yeah, they are.
You've been there a while.
Have you seen those places yet?
Yes, I went to the grand openings. The great gyms, well equipped. I mean, all the pros are there. You know.
Yeah. Everybody's even Gold's Gym in Venice.
Yeah.
Not too many guys there anymore.
No, they're all in Vegas now. No, you're right.
Yeah. Isn't that something? So that's the new Mecca.
It's the new Mecca. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Well, I'm happy to be here in Colorado, in Denver area. We've already got too many L.A. transplants, to be honest with you. Vegas, baby. Go to Vegas, baby.
Go to Vegas. Don't come here.
But you can always find me at Tom Tulier on Facebook, Instagram. I'm all over the place in that respect. But if you want a great, I'm into the digital marketing these days. So I'm more or less selling my programs and my coaching programs. And I work with a lot of more or less high achievers, business owners, things of this nature. And we always use physiology as a staple. It's the foundation for the most part. But digitally, you can find a great program at MaxMindLeanBody.com. MaxMindLeanBody.com. And it's a fantastic, one of the best programs that I've ever put together. It includes a nutrition program. It includes the training. There's a big component in there about mindset or self. And it's really designed for the over 40 crowd. You know, like I like to call them, the second half renegades. So you can find that there, or just look me up on Facebook if you ever want to chat or get to know a little bit. I'm wide open to that. And again, thanks, John, for having me back, man.
Absolutely. I'm glad all you guys were able to make it. And it's always a pleasure having you guys on the show, especially like doing shows like this where I have all of you together. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Awesome. Special thanks to you again, John.
It's been a blast.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. I'm glad you guys were able to join me.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Exciting. Well, I'll wrap it up here, and hopefully we can have you guys back one day soon, and we'll talk about some more stuff.
All right, guys. Take care.
God bless everyone.
Tony, guys. Tom, John.
Take care, guys. Phil.
Good talking to you. Great experience.
Take care, guys.
Ciao.
Michelle.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I want to thank our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring this episode of the show. I also want to thank our generous Patreon donors who continue to donate money to the show each month, which helps us keep the show on the air. Thank you guys very much. If anyone out there is interested in being a Patreon donor, you can just go to the BodybuildingLegendsShow.com website, and you'll see the link in the upper right-hand corner. All right, before I let you guys go, I do want to read an article about Matt Mendenhall, and this comes from the July 1984 issue of Flex Magazine. And what a great issue this was. It's got an article about Arnold's Conan the Destroyer movie. It's got an article about the 1984 Pro World Cup, which was won by Albert Beckles. Great stuff in all these old magazines. So anyways, this was written by Jeff Everson, who was Corey Everson's husband. He passed away a few years ago. And him and Matt Mendenhall were good friends. I think Jeff really appreciated how great Matt's body looked and the great genetics he had. So the name of the article is called Mendenhall and the Forgotten Body Parts. It says, in Xanadu, did Matt Mendenhall a stately pleasure dome decree where Elf, the sacred river, ran over body parts measureless to man down to a sunlit sea. With my deepest apologies to metaphysical poet Samuel Coleridge,
Matt Mendenhall has some body parts so unusual in shape and development, they go beyond the world of known measurement. Taking a tape measure to Matt's forearms or calves is as senseless as ordering a Diet Coke with pizza and ice cream. His forearms and calves have created new meaning to size and shape possibilities in these body parts. They are their own paradigm. You remember Matt Mendenhall. He was the new kid from Ohio that was going to smoke everybody at the 1983 Nationals. After all, he had defeated Tim Belknap and Bob Parris in 1982, barely losing to monstrous Lee Haney. All this from a guy who had been in only three previous bodybuilding contests. Problem was, in 1983, Matt had foolishly contracted to do a staggering 8 seminar posing exhibitions during a 3-month period prior to the national show. Matt didn't have the experience to realize that all the traveling and constant pressure to appear in top shape at each stop would wear him to a frazzle. Sure enough, 3 weeks before the San Jose contest, Matt contracted a virus. Unable to eat, sleep, or train, he lost weight and critical hardness. Unbelievably, he still ended up in fourth place at the Nationals. I was there. Matt was good, but nowhere near his 1982 shape, although his calves and forearms blew everyone away. Mendenhall in 1984 is reanimated. 8 months before the show, he is already a hard and defined 245 pounds. This year, he vows to cross the River Alph into bodybuilding Xanadu. To accomplish this difficult task, Matt is leaving no stone unturned. He is obstinately returning to the type of training and dieting he followed in preparation for the 1982 Nationals. He is aware that perfection in every body part must be the day-by-day goal, lest Williams, Christian, Liedemeyer, or any other pretender to the throne abscond with his crown. Matt believes he'll win. As he says, a lot of the guys concentrate on only the big body parts. Everyone at this level has a big chest and arms. That's not going to win them the show. The less important body parts, those that everyone forgets, they are going to make the difference. I want to make the traditional bodybuilding weak points my forte. As Matt delivered this bodybuilding lesson, I felt like I was a young Conan listening to my father, William Smith, telling me, "Steel, Conan. Now steel. That you can trust." Talk about forte. Matt's forearms and calves are so huge they would embarrass the pants off Oliva and Menser. And brother, I ain't lying. Calves. About his unusual calf size, Matt says, "When I was in the seventh grade, my calves grew like dandelions. I was out for football, pushing the sleds around a lot, and my calves just started to grow like hell. By the end of the season, they were so large, all the other kids constantly teased me about them. It sounds funny, but I was so disturbed by this, I almost quit or didn't go out for eighth grade ball. Gosh, what a shame, Matt. All of us bodybuilders should be so unfortunate." Matt continues, "Another interesting thing I remember was doing standing calf raises every night of my ninth grade year using two encyclopedias. I would just pump out the reps like crazy, not knowing why, only that I enjoyed the burning sensation. A nobler use of a pair of Britannicas I've never known. I've always had a theory that whatever you do during adolescence is what you will end up being best in. Since this is a developmental period, your activities at this time seem to portend any future speciality. A person who strength trains during this period seems to end up stronger than others who wait until later. The same is true of a person who does a lot of speed training during this period. And so it came about for Matt and his monstrous calves. 4 days a week seems perfect for me. The truly unique aspect of Matt's calves is the depth of the gastrocnemius medial heads. In all my years of strength training, I've never seen calves so unusually thick and deep in their lower portions, both medial and lateral heads." Matt comments, "People say my calves are all heredity, but I know better. As far as I'm concerned, no one works their calves as hard as I do. How many bodybuilders have done one-legged calf raises every night to the point of total fatigue? How many bodybuilders work their calves heavy 4 times a week? Most people don't understand how to work calves hard. For instance, they don't know that stretching is real important. He does 5 sets of 8 to 10 reps in each exercise. After every set, he concludes a brief period of stretching. Says Matt, I try to use big weights. Usually I'll go up to 800 pounds in the standing calf raise and carry 2 people plus a 130-pound dumbbell for my donkey raises. With these 2 exercises, I rest about 2 minutes between sets. On Tuesdays and Fridays, Matt returns to calf work with seated calf raises and calf extensions on a leg press machine. Again, he does 5 sets of 8 to 10 reps in each exercise. Here, he rests no more than 1 minute between sets. Matt says, I usually use 200 pounds for my seated calf work and 600 pounds for the leg press calf extension. Remember, though, that each machine is different in its leverage construction, which determines how much weight you can use. I like to do four exercises for my calves, trying to hit them from every angle. 4 days a week seems perfect for me. And don't forget the stretching. Boyer Co. says that stretching is the most important thing for good calves. I agree with him. Matt trains his calves after working his thighs on Mondays and Thursdays and after exercising another major body part on Tuesdays and Fridays. He takes no more than half an hour to finish his calf session, but believes that if he were able to find the time to train his calves 6 days a week, they would grow an inch within 6 weeks. However, he also feels that they are already in danger of becoming outsized for his thighs, so he does not follow through on the training. Must be nice to have calves that respond like that. Forearms. Matt's forearms are as unusually developed as his calves. These unique pieces of anatomy look as if they migrated from the planet Popeye. Mendenhall's entire arm structure reminds me a great deal of Larry Scott's arms when Larry was at his heaviest body weight. Both bodybuilders have relatively long muscle bellies in relation to the length of their bone segments. Therefore, their arms were and are very massive looking. Matt's wrists are very small for a man his size, and his forearms, beginning at his wrists, look like a pair of Indian clubs. Like Sergio Oliva, Matt has huge brachioradialis muscles. He trains his forearms after working his biceps on Mondays and Thursdays. He says, I don't treat my forearms casually. I don't just do a few sets to finish off my arms. I train them hard. Usually I start with four sets of thumbs up hammer curls with dumbbells. I do as much as 70 pound dumbbells for four sets of 8 reps. And I never rest longer than 2 minutes between sets. Following the hammers, I superset regular wrist curls with reverse wrist curls. I'll do 6 sets of 10 to 12 reps each set. Since I'm supersetting, I'm more concerned with the weight working for a full congestion instead. Usually I'll use 135 to 175 pounds in the regular wrist curl and 40 pounds in the reverse wrist curl. Not many bodybuilders do 16 sets just for forearms. The wisdom of Matt's training is reflected in a pair of forearms that are unparalleled in the world of bodybuilding. Trapezius and spinal erectors. Many bodybuilders ignore the trapezius muscles, a mistake since bodybuilding requires every muscle to be developed. If you lack traps, you are not complete. Powerful-looking bodybuilders always have well-developed trapezius and spinal erectors. Franco Colombo, Bertel Fox, Sergio Oliva, and Joseph Wilkosch are prime examples. On the day of his back workout, Matt adds specific exercises for his traps and erectors. For my traps, I start with barbell shrugs using 405 pounds for 4 sets of 8 reps. I then follow with 8 sets of rowing motions, 4 with 8 reps with barbell upright rows using 135 to 175 pounds, and cable rows for 4 sets of 8 reps with 130 pounds. I like to superset the barbell and cable rows. That gives me the best pump. Matt does not feel his lower back gets enough direct work from squats, so he supersets hyperextensions with medium weight deadlifts for his spinal erectors. Matt says at the end of my leg work, I'll superset 4 sets of hypers and 4 sets of deadlifts. The first 2 sets of hypers are weightless. For the second 2 sets, I use a 100-pound barbell for extra resistance. For my hypers, I'll go with 12 reps. With the deads, I crank out 8 reps, and I don't go any higher than 405 pounds. It's obvious Matt Mendenhall has genetic proclivity for bodybuilding success. He's added to his God-given potential by hard work and thoughtful training. No forgotten body parts for this man. Wow. That's an enlightening article about Matt Mendenhall. I had no idea he was training so heavy and so hard, especially on body parts that were genetically gifted, like his forearms and calves. So, great article by Jeff Everson, and I think I have another article about Matt that maybe I can read next week. I noticed I have that in one of my other old Flex magazines. So I'll get that magazine out and maybe read that next week. All right, guys, that's all we have. Again, rest in peace, Matt Mendenhall. Sad day for bodybuilding, and it looks like Leon Brown is also not doing good, so please send your prayers out to him. And next week we will have Janet Tech, former bodybuilder from the 80s, She won her class at the Nationals and was in the professional bodybuilding for a while, competed in a few Miss Olympias. Great personality. We'll be talking to Janet Tech next week. I hope you guys enjoyed our interview today with Phil Williams and Tom Terwilliger and Tony Pearson. So thanks again to them for coming on. And we will see you guys next week. Be careful out there. Be careful of that COVID. Stay healthy. Enjoy your workouts. And we'll see you guys next week. Take care.